From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 22nd day of September, 2022. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Gary Schnitke and some others here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois have penned an article about a variable cash rent lease that is really simple to understand and posted to the website. We'll talk to him about it, and then as we close out our time together on this first official day of fall, Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago will join us to discuss the harvest weather in the United States, what's happening in the Southwest, and South American weather, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn at $6.88 and a quarter, up 2 3/4 today. The March at $6.93 and a quarter, 3 higher on its settlement price. And the May at $6.94 and a quarter, up 3.5 cents. November beans $14.57, down 4 1/4. The January $14.63 and a quarter, 3 3/4 lower. And March soybeans down 3.5 cents at $14.65. Bean meal down $8.80. The bean oil $1.60 higher on the afternoon. December wheat futures at $9.10 and 3/4, up 7. For the soft red, the hard red at 979.5, up 12.5 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $149.35, $1.40 lower. The feeders down $2.27.5 per 100 pounds at 178.25, and lean hogs $85.67.5, 77.5 cents lower. Crude oil at $83.13 a barrel, up 19 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil up about a nickel at $3.31 and 3 tenths, and the wholesale price of gasoline today, a penny and 2 cents higher at $2.42 and 1/2 cents. We're now joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Did you get rainfall last night there on the farm?
Actually, we had a little shower, a little bit of a sprinkle, but we really didn't amount to much of anything. The wind picked up big time after that little system kind of went through. And then this morning when we got up, you know, the wind was blowing hard, and we actually got started picking some corn around 9:30 in the morning. So typically we don't get started that early, but the way the wind was blowing, it sure did dry things out pretty quick.
The farmers in your area and the corn that you're picking, pretty good this year?
Yes, I would say we're extremely happy with it. We figured that we would have pretty good corn. I mean, you know, obviously I think we all go out there every year planning on hopes for a big year, but this year, plain and simple, we were just blessed by really good weather. All the pieces were there, and then, month of July, we just happened to get a little more rainfall than most folks got, especially up in your part of the world and in the Champaign County. You know, I know a lot of folks that we deal with up in there, you know, still got good corn from what I'm hearing, but it's just, you know, it's hard to raise it whenever you get half the rain that your neighbors to the south get.
Now, there are deals at this point, some half-price drying and those sorts of things. Farmers that are able to get in the field and move, should they take advantage of some of this, of the product that they would either need to sell off across the scale or store at the elevator?
Yeah, and so actually, you know, one of the processors indicators is free drying up to 25% shrink only. I know that a lot of elevators are running half-price drying, and then, you know, a couple of these end users are actually offering one heck of a push to get a hold of some of this corn. So just from one elevator to another, you know, I've seen 50, 60, 70 cent difference, you know, in what you're going to receive per bushel. That's one heck of a deal. So that if you're able to get out there and go early and you can't store all your corn on the farm, by all means, I take advantage. Now, where it gets tricky is where you can store your corn on the farm. You know, do you go ahead and take advantage of a 40, 50 cent push? I think for me to get started, it's pretty hard to turn that down. I think when you look at the dollars and cents, especially with someone with an APH-type crop, it's a no-brainer to take advantage of that.
What are you hearing about soybeans and what the marketplace has been doing this week?
Yeah, so soybean yields, there's not very many of them out there yet. You know, most folks haven't been able to get started. There's been a few of them within 15, 20 miles of where I am at, you know, that have been harvested, and I'd say those yields sounded pretty good. Talked to growers in other parts of the country where they weren't near as excited. So I think it's going to be a mixed bag, kind of like corn. You look at the bean market, you're not really going to benefit much from some of the fears and the unrest in the Black Sea region, you know, with Russia and Ukraine. More of the benefactors are going to be corn and wheat. But ultimately, I think with beans, you've still got this issue of trying to sort out the extremely tight situation in the U.S., you know, and then looking at, for instance, Brazil coming at us with what is supposed to be an awfully large crop. It's the difference between global and domestic, and I still think that soybeans at anywhere close to $15, maybe closer to, you know, the $15.14 most of the days in here this week. And so, to me, I really struggle to think that that's not a good place to go ahead and sell beans.
This is a supply-side issue for you on the beans. However, I'm wondering how well demand on the other products, corn particularly, is holding up.
Well, Todd, you know, the thing is, this week our ethanol numbers weren't very good at all, you know, and so gasoline demand is suffering somewhat. There's a lot of fear about global recession, not just here in the U.S., interest rates continuing to go up. It's probably not going to help us a whole lot, you know, on that front. But at the same time, the USDA has been very aggressive in cutting demand, took 250 million out in September. And, you know, with that being the case, they're going to run into a situation where they can't cut much more out if, you know, they have to cut yield a little bit more. So God forbid we have to take more yield out. I think this quarterly stocks report coming up is going to be extremely interesting to see if we've got as much corn on hand as what the USDA is saying. Because if we don't, we're going to have some pretty big issues as far as trying to meet our demand with the kind of supply that we're going to be able to raise this year.
So that quarterly stocks report is due out Friday of next week. That's on the 30th of September. And it should be a good number because we really haven't had that much in the way of harvest of either corn or soybeans across the whole of the United States to this point. On that note, I'm wondering, because harvest, I don't want to call it late, but because it's a slower start, do you have fear that the marketplace could fold in the next week and a half?
You know, I'm a little bit concerned. There's no question coming into harvest that that is always a potential. Again, I think there's a lot. The person has to understand that the supply and demand fundamentals are still supportive, if not friendly, for corn and soybeans. Now, you're already looking at, you know, like I said, $14.60 and pushing $7. No beans and these corn are concerned. And so you've got to stop and take a look at that and ask, do I want to be bullish from this point forward? You know, with global fears of recession, it's very concerning, you know, with China seeing their economy slow down, they're wanting to pull soybean meal out of their hog ration. I mean, to me, there's a lot of reasons why a person would want to, at the very least, quantify your worst-case scenarios. You know, and if you want to keep flexibility to the upside, I can give you a whole list of reasons why this market could still rally. But I guess my personal opinion is, let's quantify the worst-case scenario and make a lot of money this year.
Well, and finally, if I could ask you about the 2023 crop, we've been talking about locking in some of the inputs and covering that risk by making sales in some form of corn, particularly to cover nitrogen, maybe the cost of the hybrids. Is that still the case? I see December corn 2023 settled at $6.30 a bushel.
Yeah, I mean, to me, these 23, I still like stepping in there, getting some of your input costs quantified, especially anhydrous, if you can get a good quote. Now, I've seen the price of anhydrous jump a bunch in the last 2 to 3 weeks, and so I'm not totally sure I'm going to want to jump on it right now. But if you do and you run the numbers at 630 D's 23 corn, you can still pencil really good profit whenever you compare it to historicals. And so, yeah, my personal opinion is at least a floor. If you want to leave room to the upside, we can put a floor on, maybe sell a call at 7 or 750. There's a lot of different things you can do to give yourself stability, but the bottom line is getting a floor in is probably the most important thing we can do.
Hey, Matt, thank you very much. Are you on the combine, by the way?
Yes, I'm actually in the combine. We're trying to get everything we can done. You know, it's gone excellent. Picking corn today that's running 19 to 20%. Dried down an incredible amount over the last week. It's probably averaged a point a day at least. And so, you know, we're getting into it as much as what we can before we switch to beans, because our thought is once we get back on the corn after beans, we're probably looking at a bunch of 14 and 15% corn.
Hey, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now, later this afternoon, I'll record Commodity Week with our panelists, including Wayne Nelson, along with Kurt Kimmel and Merrill Crowley. You can hear that this evening up on our website at willag.org, and tomorrow on our home station in its entirety on many of these radio stations as well on the weekend. Otherwise, you can always find it at willag.org. We're now joined by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's that time of year when landowners and farmers are working towards next year's cash rent or lease agreements. And Gary, along with a few others, has penned an article for the FarmDoc Daily website titled "A Straightforward Variable Cash Lease with Revised Parameters." That title is a little more confusing, I think, than the article itself, Gary, because really this is a pretty simple cash rent lease that varies with however good the crop happens to be and prices for that matter, because it's always price times yield. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, there's many different ways of putting together variable cash rent. We made a suggestion of a pretty straightforward one that accomplishes the objective of having the rent vary with gross revenue. Our lease that we suggest in this article has the rent factor that multiplies times crop revenue. So we have a rent factor for corn and we have a rent factor for soybeans. You figure out what crop revenue is for corn and crop revenue for soybeans, and there is your cash rent by taking that rent factor times the crop revenue. If that's above a minimum, you have a cash higher cash rent than the minimum cash rent.
Now, come back to those percentages in just a bit. You do divide the state up into three areas, northern, central, and southern, and suggest minimum cash rents for both corn and soybeans in those areas. Can you tell me how you arrived at those?
Yeah, when we set a minimum cash rent, we took what the average cash rent was for 2021 in that region and subtracted $100. The reason why we did that was just to have some lower end in there. So you have to set a lower end that's meaningful, and $100 from the average cash rent seemed meaningful to us.
And needs to be meaningful because it needs to qualify as a cash rent agreement?
Yeah, so for FSA to treat a variable cash rent as a cash rent, it has to have a minimum base rent in it or a minimum cash rent. If it doesn't have that in there, then FSA will treat it as a share rent. And the share rent will then, if it is declared a share rent, the landowner will get a portion of the FSA payments. That isn't necessarily bad, but most landowners don't want to deal with FSA, so keeping it at this cash rent keeps them out of FSA offices.
So let's go through what this variable cash rent lease agreement would look like on a Central Illinois farm. What is the minimum cash rent?
So our minimum cash rent for Central Illinois was $230 per acre.
Is there a maximum?
We put a maximum in there of $430. Again, if you have a minimum, you might want to also have a maximum.
Is that an arbitrary function? I mean, how did you come up with it?
It's $100 above average cash rent. So
you've got a minimum cash rent of $230, a maximum of $430. So there's $200 in there that is derived, and we'll just stick with corn for the moment, on a percentage basis of yield times price, correct? And what is that percent for corn?
So we calculated a rent factor for corn for Central Illinois of 32%. And what that would do is cause the average cash rent from the variable lease to equal the average cash rent from a fixed cash rent over time. So if an individual landowner wants more than that, than the average cash rent, they would raise the rent factor and vice versa. But for that, it's 32%. And just to give you an example that we did in an article, Central Illinois, we'd be looking at an expectation next year of $227 bushels per yield. Obviously, we don't know that yet. We're using an expected price of $5.50. That would be $12.49 revenue. $12.49 times 32% is $400 per acre. So that's how that corn acre would contribute to the variable cash lease. And if you had 50% of corn acres, then that factor would, $400 would be 50% of the lease.
So you have 32% of yield times price. How do you derive the price?
The price, and there's different ways of doing it. What we would suggest to do is take a local delivery point, local elevator, most likely where the grain will be delivered, and collect cash prices from March through October. March through October gives you a pretty good time period for calculating that price. March through August, you would probably be or would be, want to be using cash bids for harvest time. After September, it would be a harvest time bid. You could do it longer than October, but the longer you do it, the longer it will take to know what the crop revenue is. So if you go from March to October, take a average or a price for every Wednesday, average them, you can come up with a market price. Take the farm yield, multiply the two together, and you got crop revenue.
So it is really a pretty easy calculation. In Central Illinois, it would be $230 as a minimum. You say the maximum is $430, so you could have something larger than that, but if it's above that, the farmer is going to get the rest of that income based on his management or her management. And so it's the 230 plus total yield times the average of the March to October cash price, and then you add those two together.
Yep.
And you come up with a cash rent. Do you have a suggestion as to when this be paid?
We would suggest paying the base rent before planting begins, and bonus or the additional rent in December, or as soon as you know what those are. So
again, 32% is the rent factor for corn. What's the rent factor for soybean?
It is 43%. And again, 43%, it's higher than corn because of there's less revenue for soybeans. Again, those 32 and 43%, we set those factors so that the average cash rent in Central Illinois would equal the average rent from the variable cash rent over that time period.
And finally, did you put this in historical context?
Yes, we did. We have a couple graphs in the article that describe that. It would have paid, the variable cash rent would pay more in high income years, which happens to be over the last since 2000, that would have included 2007, 2008, 2011, 2013. So those are some of the years in which the variable cash rent would have paid more. A lot of years it would pay less, just because that's the way this works.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may find his A Straightforward Variable Cash Lease with Revised Parameters article on the FarmDoc Daily website now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Mike Tenura at tstorm.net joins us from T-Storm Weather. Thank you, Mike, for being with us to talk about the forecast for harvest. Let's begin in the United States. What kind of conditions will farmers here be working under?
There's not a lot of rain coming up for a while, so that'll be nice for corn and soybean harvesting. We don't have a lot of concern until we get later into next week. There's a number of signals that suggest a hurricane will form in the southern Gulf of Mexico. That takes place around Tuesday, so not too far into the future. There's also a number of indications that it will become a strong hurricane with time. Now, whether or not that moves toward the U.S. or toward Mexico or dissipates, these are all questions that we can't answer today. The one thing that we can say is that cool air masses will move across the eastern U.S. over the next week and provide a blocking mechanism from this hurricane. So as the system starts to develop and move toward the United States, it more than likely will interact with that cool air mass, and that should cause it to weaken as it approaches about a week from now. Now, Todd, that's all a week from now, so we just need to watch that. Our main concerns with it for agriculture would be if it were to strike near New Orleans, where we're exporting a lot of grain, or if we're going to move into the Delta region and then produce a lot of rain on corn and soybeans that are being harvested from Arkansas onto the South.
Speaking of the South, let's transition to South America at this point, where I think they're hopeful that they'll have wetter conditions in Brazil to at least get the planting season off to a good start. Is that going to be the case?
Well, in Brazil, we're waiting for the rainy season to start. That's always the case in September because it's very dry from June through July and August and into the first half of September. And then it slowly starts to turn wetter in central Brazil. By the time we get into the middle of November, so just 8 weeks from now, their climate is a lot wetter. They'll be averaging about 2 inches of rain per week in the key states of Goiás and Mato Grosso, and that's where soybeans will be planted first. Now, they're starting to plant soybeans as we speak, but they need the rains to show up before they can get going. The rains are going to show up earlier than usual because the cool front is moving northward, and that's going to interact with muggy air starting this weekend and then continuing next week. So there should be some decent rains across these key states later on next week and into early October, and that will help to kick off soybean planting season without a hitch. In Argentina, we're in a long-running drought. The last 5 months have been the driest since 2006, and until we get some good rains there, it's going to be a concern for the wheat crop in particular. Now, there's just not much rain on the horizon. We have a number of cool fronts that will pass over the next 10 days, but they will be preceded and followed by dry air masses. Because of that, we just can't get a lot of rain going, and that'll take us right into October when wheat starts to turn sensitive and we'll have fairly dry conditions in place. Now, if October stays dry, then there's no question this is a problem for wheat, and it might even impact corn and sunflower planting by delaying it a little bit while farmers hope for more rain. If we start to get some really good rains, though, once we get into the middle of October, then the situation will alleviate itself, and corn, sunflower, and soybean producers won't be too concerned about it because dry weather in the winter isn't too big of a deal. Wheat farmers will still need a lot of rain, and even though we are concerned about this, we do just have to wait a little bit more before we sound the alarm bells. It's been really dry. It looks to stay dry for another 10 days. And beyond that, it's a little bit uncertain.
Hey, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
That's Mike Tenura. You can find him online at tstorm.net. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.